On this podcast, we discuss medical diagnoses and procedures. All of the guests express their own opinions. You should always seek medical advice from a trained and credentialed professional when making decisions about your own health. Welcome to the Sleep Apnea Stories podcast. I'm Emma Cooksey, and I've been coping with sleep apnea since childhood. I didn't know anyone in my life with a sleep disorder, so I decided to start this podcast. I'm here to build community and provide a platform for people with sleep apnea to tell their stories. Together, we can shatter stereotypes and raise awareness. We'll be exploring all sorts of treatment options and lifestyle choices to help you live your best life with sleep apnea. This is Sleep Apnea Stories, and I'm so glad you're here. Hey there, it's Emma Cooksey here, and I'm your host. So before we got onto today's conversation, when I listened back to it, I thought to myself, if somebody doesn't know who Jason Sazama is, they're going to be like really confused for half of this episode. So Jason Sazama is a sleep tech, and he has a really successful YouTube channel called The Lanky Lefty 27, where he posts all about CPAP and CPAP settings. He also was on my podcast before, so if you haven't listened to that episode, I really encourage you to go back and find it. I'm going to put a link in the show notes as well to this episode. Jason's a great guy, and me and Bob being today's guest, both worked with Jason through his company AXG Diagnostics, and Jason was able to help us to kind of fine-tune our CPAP settings. I would never recommend anybody doing anything to their pressure settings without talking to their doctor who prescribed the CPAP. So that's just a little bit about who Jason is, in case you're listening to this episode going, wow, this Jason Sazama guy sounds really great, but I've got no idea who he is. So on to today's guest. So today I'm joined by Bob Feil, who is a former Major League Baseball player. And so for any of you who have listened for a while, you know that I love interviewing professional athletes with sleep apnea, just because I think it sends a really powerful message about who can have sleep apnea and that they don't need to, you know, be overweight and out of shape to have a diagnosis of sleep apnea. There's that, but also we just got into this really great discussion all about how Bob's getting on now that he's got his diagnosis, adapting to CPAP. It was pretty rocky in the start, and he talks all through that and a little bit about working with Jason. Bob was at Jefferson University, and he played baseball and is one of only four Rams to have their jerseys retired by the school. And then in 1998, he was drafted in Major League Baseball by the Toronto Blue Jays and went on to appear in 3.5 seasons playing for them. In his career after baseball, he has focused on IT and computer science, and he's now the VP of Solution Engineering at Sorcero. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Bob Feil. So Bob, thank you so much for joining me.
Great to be here, Emma.
So whenever anybody reaches out to me and they mention that they've been a professional athlete and they have sleep apnea, I'm always extremely excited to interview them. I think when I first started the podcast, when I wrote my list of people I wanted to interview, I was just like, anyone that doesn't fit the stereotype we have, the only older overweight men have sleep apnea. So I was like, athletes, women, parents of children, like, you know, all sorts of people you wouldn't think of. So maybe you can just start, before we get into all the sleep stuff, do you want to just start and explain to people a little bit about your background and being a kid growing up, like how you got into baseball, all of that?
Yeah, I mean the short version, I'll give like the abridged version, but
We need
grew up
plenty of
in
sleep apnea time, so
Yes,
just
I
give us
know.
the brief intro.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Philadelphia, middle class, blue collar family. Not I mean, both my parents were blue collar, never n neither one of them, I mean, barely finished high school. So when it came to, it was all about athletics, of course. And then my dad was a professional softball player, kind of got into a couple different sports when I was younger. Wound up picking up baseball at like 4 or 5 years old. Again, growing up in kind of, low middle class Philadelphia, it was a nice neighborhood. But we didn't have a whole lot of money at all, and kind of just played on the field in the local neighborhood and was a pretty good athlete. I often consider myself a late bloomer. I started school early, but ultimately got into baseball. Baseball is my primary sport. I played other sports. I played a lot of basketball as well. So I've always been into athletics. And then went on to high school, did well in high school, got a scholarship to play Division II baseball in the Philadelphia area, and then ultimately wound up getting drafted into professional baseball after my senior year. But at the heart of everything, I've always been a student first. I actually chose the school I went to, which is now Jefferson University, for their computer science program. It's an engineering school, and I wound up graduating before I got drafted into professional baseball. So it worked out. As of today, it worked out pretty well. But I preface that because as we get into the conversation talking about sleep apnea and how close I am to like analytics and computers and technology and how far things have come today with sleep apnea, and how I really dug in and being a student, wanting to know anything and everything about sleep apnea is kind of what brought us together, because I've learned a ton in the last 6, 7 months. But ultimately, again, sports was number one growing up, my family, my neighborhood. There's not a whole lot of professional athletes that come out of where I grew up in Philly. But that being said, I had a lot of luck as well, hard work and luck, kind of that grit kind of got me to the major leagues. Of course, growing up where I did, that grit got me there. I wasn't necessarily the most talented, but being able to be consistent and disciplined and work hard, kind of got some luck, but made it and had a pretty good story to tell now these days.
Yeah, that's awesome. So tell us about when, so all the different people I've interviewed will kind of approach this really differently, but I don't know whether you want to start with your sleep as a kid or a teenager, or looking back now when you think maybe some symptoms started, because I know oftentimes in retrospect, it's easier to pick that out.
I think that's key, right? Like I look back even every day, I just think about different things as a kid, and I listen to a lot of different episodes of your podcast, and a couple and we'll get into like how like the YouTubers I've really connected with that are really experts in the field. And it's funny, I look back
Have
now
you
and
found
I've always
Vic
been
Beer yet?
who
Vic Beer.
I might have I'm pretty much locked in with the lanky lefty with
Oh,
Jason.
yeah, I love Jason.
I've
Do
actually met with
you?
Jason. He actually made a huge difference with everything,
Yes,
as of a couple of
me
weeks ago.
too.
Huge different. I mean, he's what made me find you, and we'll
Yeah,
talk about that. But
awesome.
for me, I've always been called a light sleeper, and I talked to my mother about this a little bit. When I was first diagnosed last I guess I took the sleep study last January, and then March I was on a CPAP machine. But I was talking to my mom about it, and she's like, "Yeah," she's like, "I remember you had some breathing issues as a kid. You always had asthma and allergies, like bad allergies, terrible
Same.
allergies. Light sleeper, never slept through the night my entire life ever." I remember being in school. Now looking back, being in school, even in college, being the one that always needs a power nap before practice, like always. I could never, and I thought it was just because my brain was always working, always thinking, overanalyzing everything. Anxiety was creeping in. At that point, looking back on it was probably anxiety. It's gotten worse as an adult prior to CPAP therapy, really. And so being a light sleeper, you don't think anything of it. And again, going back to where I grew up and the family I grew up in, I mean, we didn't go to the doctors for any, I mean, sleep apnea. We didn't go to the doctors for allergies, let alone sleep apnea. Going to a sleep doctor, they didn't even
So
know what a
the
pulmonologist
allergies
was.
thing, like I feel as though like when I go to sleep conferences, I speak to a bunch of doctors and they kind of look at me like, so you weren't like taken to an allergist? And I'm like, I don't really remember that being a thing. Like I had horrendous allergies, but it was just one of those things in my family where we were like, we still had a rabbit and a guinea pig that I was really allergic to, but it was just kind of like, get on with it.
Exactly. And you know, it's all, like you said, it's all retrospect now, but I look back and I'm like, all those, you know, light sleeping, it's just something I just dealt with. And then when I got into professional ball, I kind of got really deep into fitness, like really into it, because we had the best resources. We had, you know, top tier people when it comes to, you know, training and
Yeah.
things like that. And it was around 98 to 2005, six I played. So that's when tech started to come into the game a little bit. And me being a techie at heart, I was all about, you know, looking into that. And
Yeah.
I would do different tests with running and my breathing. I always thought I had, because I would work harder than anyone. I always prided myself on that, and I would still not be able to keep up in terms of long distance running, and I would just be dead in terms of like my breathing. I thought my breathing was off, and I just never thought anything of it. I just thought that's the way I'm built, whatever, and kind of just pushed through everything. So looking back on it now, I'm like, maybe there was a connection. I don't possibly.
And
And
so
so.
this, so even the early, I feel like so much has changed, but even that long ago, like I feel as though there weren't the sleep trackers and the focus
Right,
on
no,
sleep. Like
not
now I
yet.
feel like sleep and athletics is a much bigger thing,
Yeah,
but maybe
huge.
not then. Like they're
No.
tracking more like your athletic performance and different things, but not sleep.
Yeah, exactly. And then when I got done playing in 2005, it's interesting. I jumped right into the pharmaceutical world. I worked as a pharmaceutical sales rep in the field, and I worked for AstraZeneca, and I sold Symbicort, Pulmicort Respules, Pulmicort, all the different asthma and allergy drugs. And so I got to know a lot of pulmonologists in the tri-state area really well. To this day, I'm still close with a lot of them.
Yeah.
And I remember I would meet with some sleep specialists. I didn't know a thing about it. I would meet in there. I would do these preceptorships, they're called. I would actually sit in the lab and watch. And we would, you know, you pay the physicians or the practice to kind of a learning. And I would learn a lot about sleep medicine. I remember talking to a pulmonologist back in
Oh.
2007. In 2007 or 8, I talked to one that I was friendly with over a lunch, and he's like, "You ever think about just doing a sleep study just for the hell of it?" And I was like, "Sleep study, like hook, like sleep overnight in your office? Like, there's no way I'm the lightest sleeper ever. I won't get any sleep." And he's like, "Yeah, you should try just get a baseline." And I just never thought anything of it, because I was telling him at the time, like, I'm exhausted midday, like all the time, and I know I'm an early riser. I work out in the mornings early, but again, is it just getting older? And at the time, I was like 30.
Not that
And
old. Yeah.
yeah, not that old, but again, I never really took them up on kind of the offer, but I learned a lot about, you know, the respiratory system and how things work. And I
So
mean,
you
really, we
learned
really,
about sleep apnea at that point?
not really. It was more around asthma and
Okay.
allergies,
Okay.
which are
Because of the
kind of
drugs that you
linked in the
were
same way.
working
But the
with.
pulmonologists I called on, some of them were sleep
Yes.
pulmonology offices, and they dealt with any type of respiratory issues. But so I kind of learned, kind of adjacent, just my own learnings, just being in conversations about sleep and sleep labs and how they operate it. And then I wound up changing companies, sold different types of medication to different doctors, and then I, long story short, jumped back into tech. But I kind of, looking back on it now, it's like, oh, okay. I see. And some of those pulmonologists I'm still close with today, and I'll get into that, of how I contacted a couple of those folks. And it's interesting, the conversations we have versus a conversation I had with like Jason
Yeah.
from YouTube. And you know, it's there's a combination, and you know, from listening to your podcast, there's a combination of a lot of things that are not optimized in terms of the healthcare environment in the US, in terms of like time
If
doctors can
you
spend. We
if
can get,
you're a systems geek, like, oh my God, like we've got a system for you to sort out.
oh, and have I ever dug into
Like,
that?
yeah, there's a lot there that could be a lot better.
So how it ended up is, I go to this regenerative sports medicine out of California. They're like my primary kind of go-to everything doctor. And a couple of people recommended me to them a couple of years ago through athletics, very top-notch, based in California. And we do a lot of virtual appointments. I get blood work done every 3 to 6 months, like clockwork, just because, like full panels. And he had mentioned to me 2 years ago, like, "You ever think about getting a sleep test? Your red blood cells and hemoglobin and your hemocrit are elevated, and I bet you have a breathing issue at night. I bet you might have." He's like, "I'm not saying, but you might have sleep apnea of some sort. It might be mild, but it could cause, you know, raises in these levels." I'm like,
Yeah.
"Get out of here. No way." And
So
that was 2 years
what
ago.
was it about that? That's super interesting to me. What was it about that that made, was it the idea that the only people that have sleep apnea are older, overweight men, or Like, what is it? Why weren't you like quick to say, oh, sure, let's test for that? You just
I was
didn't think that
kind
that could apply to you.
of, I thought I was just uneducated on the subject. I figured, you know, like wearing a machine, like I just didn't know enough about it to even look into it. Like, I just really didn't even know. I just didn't know anything. I mean, one thing I did do was get a mouthpiece, because I was always a teeth grinder. That was another symptom I look back on. Terrible teeth grinder, like terrible. And I wore a mouth guard forever, just the bed. So my a dentist recommended it about 6 years ago, and I just always I'm used to it.
But it wasn't, so just to be clear, it wasn't a mandibular advancement device to treat sleep apnea. It was
No.
a mouth guard, like basically
Guard,
like a
but both.
teeth.
Yeah, it keeps my teeth kind of in, but keeps my jaw forward though, but it not one of those ones you can adjust. It was more for teeth grinding. They usually give one on the top or bottom. They gave me one with both, which I have a couple of them now, and I'll talk about how I use that now with the CPAP, and it's done wonders for things. But yeah, looking back on that, that's another thing. But like ultimately, I just didn't know enough about it. And again, back to the stereotype of that's for older people, really elderly people. And I was like, you know, I asked somebody about it, they're like,
And
oh,
you're like,
obstructive sleep
I'm an
apnea.
athlete.
I'm like, I'm in great shape. I take care of myself. I don't snore. That was a big one. Do you snore a lot? That was even my doctor said, do you snore a lot? I said, not at all. I'm never been a snorer at all. I mean, never. And so that was another piece where I was like, I'm not a snorer. I didn't know enough about it. I didn't do research at the time because it wasn't that big of a problem to me. I was sleeping the way I always slept. I
You
was
just,
still
so it's
functioning.
mainly
I
the
wasn't.
tiredness. So you're grinding your teeth and you're getting
Yeah.
tired midday, but otherwise you're not. Are you
Yes.
having morning headaches? Like, are there any other
Well,
things happening?
what this is, so this brings us kind of fast forward a year later. So back to like December of last year, before I had the sleep test, I was having night sweats a lot. And I said, he recommended a sleep study, and you can do them at home now. So I was like, let me just look up some things. And I saw sleep apnea, and what triggered me to get a sleep study was I wasn't having headaches, the teeth grinding, it was the night sweats as a symptom. And I was like, I was like, let me just, and I contacted them. I was like, it was more annoying than anything, the night sweat. So I was like, let me ask him about the home sleep test. And he's like, set it up in a day. He's like, oh, 2 nights at home, be a piece of cake.
And for a lot
I
of people,
mean,
I think that that's the difference between, oh, fine, let's just do it then, right? Like,
for
I
me, it
talked to
was.
lots of people who are like, well, I'm not going to like a lab and having them
And then
watch me
plus the weight,
sleep, but doing
even
something
the
at home
pulmonologists
is
I
doable.
know, they said it was like 6 to 8 months to get in the lab for a sleep study. I'm like, oh, and you know, in today's environment, I want it now. So I was like, home sleep test, at least I'll get it something, get some, you know, peace of mind. And it was obviously really easy. So I decided in January to get that sleep test done. And
That was January of this year.
yes, January of this year. And it did it. And then a week later, the results came back. I saw the whole sleep report. And I came back as mild sleep apnea. That's what it says at the top. You know, I at the time, I didn't know enough to read a sleep report and understand what AHI was or anything like that. And I was looking at it like mild. When you hear mild, you think, oh, it's no big deal. And it was like 12.8 events an hour. So 12.8. And then, you know, knowing what I know now, I'm like, I mean, so I talked to my doctor. He's like, listen, he's like, it's recommended you try CPAP out. I'm like, hey, if it's going to help me sleep better. And I'm at this point between the sleep study and before I got on a CPAP, that like month in between there, I joined like Facebook groups, started digging through the internet, YouTube videos between like Nico, the Australian guy, and Lefty and Lanky Lefty, those two. I just dug in and started to learn a lot more. And I think that really opened my eyes to the possibilities. And I'm thinking, oh, everybody, these Facebook groups, I mean, there's some great information there. There's some very like uneducated folks in there. And they're saying, I put it on one night. I was like a superhero the next day. I'm like, this is going to be great. I'm like, because in terms of discipline and consistency, I knew I'd wear it and I'd just do it. I go to bed early. I'm pretty regimented. And I was like, I'll give it a shot. So when I got the machine in March 16th was my first night. I'll never forget. And I tried it on during the day and they're like, where do I watch TV? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I tried it on and I put it on. I remember the experience, like thinking it's going to be like fresh air coming in my face. And I was on a range from like 5 to 15 on like a VPAP. So, and we can talk about all that as well, but not knowing what I know, put it on. I'm like, oh, adjust automatically. This is going to be great. I put it on. I'm like, whoa. I was like, how am I going to sleep with this on my face? Like, it's one thing breathing in. It's the breathing out part, even with
Yes.
a when you've never done it before. I was like, I feel like I'm suffocating. I was telling my wife, I'm like, I feel like I'm suffocating. So I was like, I'll try it tonight. And I remember the first, I tell people the first, I would say 2 weeks, maybe like 12 days, were absolute hell. Hell. I mean, thank God for my discipline and my like grit.
Yes.
I can totally understand how people are like, screw this, I'll take my chances. Because
Yeah.
it's so daunting when you put that and you're trying to sleep and you're like, first of all, having something in your face, it makes you hot. You're like, and I'm using a full
Right.
face mask. I tried the nasal pillows, forget that. I can barely breathe out of my nose anyway.
Yep, same.
And I was like, and backing up a step, going through the healthcare system for all this. I mean, the DME I was using, it was like, okay, you're a mouth breather? Okay, we'll send it. I got it in the mail. No drag, no nothing. Thank God I'm like a smart guy. Like I looked up how to like turn it on and use it and put a
Yeah.
mask on and fit myself. But I remember those first couple of nights, I said to my wife, I was like, I don't think I'm sleeping at all. Like I felt like I was 3 days, 3 nights straight. I felt like I didn't sleep for 3 days straight at all. Like I was just laying there, just being like, this, I can't, I'm trying to adjust my breathing. I'm like, this is absolutely a nightmare. But I forced myself, with compliance with the insurance, 4 hours a night for that. I'm like, that would be a piece of cake. In the beginning, I forced myself at least 6 hours, 6 to 8 hours. I was going to keep going no matter what. And I was pretty consistent for those first 2 weeks. And then 2 weeks happened, and then I had to go to Nashville, Tennessee for a conference for work. And I had to bring it with me. 2 weeks in, I'm like, I have to travel with this thing.
Yeah.
And I went on the road, and it actually was easier because I was in a room by myself, not with the family at home, my wife there. Like it was just, I could just focus on like trying to routine. I should put a podcast
I
in,
don't know
try to
about
just lay
you,
there.
but did you? So I definitely felt like when I first started CPAP and I was having a lot of problem. I mean, I feel like I had every problem. But I feel as though when I finally just was like, you're just gonna have to go in the spare room to my husband. It was easier to make that transition and get used to it because I didn't have the added layer of I'm going to wake him up
Wake them
with
up.
all my
Yeah.
shenanigans.
I know.
So for us, like it's been a lot better. I mean, he doesn't always sleep in the spare room now that I'm super used to it, but like, if the dog, yeah, anyway, that's
No, I know.
the whole thing. When we
I
got the
totally get it.
dog,
And
I was
I.
just like, I'm not sleeping with the dog in here, But like, I think that, that's something that, I mean, well, no one tells you anything about any of this, but like, that's something that I wish that we'd kind of had that conversation earlier because I wouldn't have had that added layer of like, now I'm
Yes.
interrupting his sleep and all of that. It's a
Yes.
whole nother
I mean, there should
level.
be like, I mean, thank God for like YouTube and like being a learner myself and being able to follow some videos and see like, oh, and then those Facebook groups. And one thing they were good for, they're still good for today, is like just getting feedback on a search and you search for past things, because there's like 30, 40,000 people in these groups, and they're just saying like, oh, did you experience this, this, or this? And like, how do you have your setup to where like I have a whole setup now where it's like the tube doesn't rub anymore on the bed, like it's all quiet. And then we use a noise machine, so you don't
Yeah.
hear. So it's I don't keep her up or anything like that. So it's very, I have it down now to where, again, it's that added layer of like you care about the other person, not disrupting
Yeah.
them with this craziness you have going on with this Darth
Yeah.
Vader mask on every night. And but it's interesting because there's so many mask choices out there, and I'm like, I'm trying. The first I use like an F30. I used an F30 first, and the ResMed F30, and then. Again, and we can talk, you start looking at the app and numbers, and I just look at AHI at the time, and I'm like, my first 2 nights I had an AHI of like 5 point something. I'm like freaking out. I'm like, it has to be under five, and I'm like, let me change masks. So then I went to an F30i. Again, not knowing enough about pressures, about the inner, not being completely educated like I am now, or the more so educated. So I switched to an F30i where the tube is on top, and I'm like, oh, that's easier to move around, a side sleeper, and I had pretty good numbers. Like my AHI until a couple weeks ago was consistently 1, 0 to 3. Like it never went above, besides those first 2 nights, it never went above five again, ever
So
in
your
7 months.
doctor at that point is thoroughly happy.
So here's the thing. So my doctors, they're not necessarily, they do a little bit of everything. They're kind of like an all-encompassing regenerative practice, like holistic medicine practice. But the pulmonologist that I know two of them. One, a friend of mine is really close with, and I asked him to look at my report. I printed out a report. I said, take a look at this. Does everything look good? And he said, this is one of the best, fantastic. He's like, you're perfect. You're perfect. Just keep going as is. And this was about a month ago. And I'm thinking, and now
And
to
how are
kind
you
of get into it,
feeling at this point?
that's
Is the
here's
main
the
thing.
thing. Here's the thing. So for the first, it was like the honeymoon stage, right? Like it was the first, after I got used to, after the first couple of weeks, I kind of got used to it. Then I started waking up being like, I felt like when I took the mask off and I felt like I could breathe. Like I felt like I could smell better. Like I just felt like better all around. But it was incremental, right? Like I always felt good because I take care of myself. Like I always felt decent, but I felt like, oh, I feel pretty good. Like I feel it must be working, right? But I told myself I'd give it a month of like really try it hard. And then I would say, for me, now that I'm starting to learn more and more at the time, I knew there was programs like Oscar Sleep HQ where you could really dig into the numbers.
Yeah.
And I knew being analytics, I work in analytics for a living. I knew if I started to look at that, I would get, I need to get a good sample size of data. So I said, I'm going to give it 6 months. And then I won't even pull the same card out for 6 months. So that was about almost a month ago. And I pulled the card out one day and I said, I'm feeling okay, but my average number was probably like 1 point something in terms of AHI. And it was mostly hypopneas, rarely obstructives, but no centrals for the most part, unless they were like false flags. And I was like, all right, let me put this card in. So I put the card in, and after watching enough videos to kind of teach myself, I'm like, wait a second. Okay, so some of these nights I have like, let's say I have a 2.8 AHI. I'm like, that's 8 hours. I'm like, that's a lot of disruptions that the machine's flagging me. And then I'm looking at the data and I'm looking at the
Yes.
flow rate and I'm looking at, now I'm starting to understand like there's more disruptions here than's being reported. But and I'm also not totally energetic all day. Not that you're going to be like superhero, but at least I'm seeing a difference. But for the difference that I expect for doing all this work and effort, I want to optimize this.
Right.
So at this point, I've been watching enough of Jason's videos, the Lanky Lefty, to know he offers services. So I looked him up and I scheduled an appointment for him to sit there. Because I knew talking to the Palms, I know, unless there's a great sleep tech that works there that's going to sit down with you, he's going to sit with me and we're going to dig through this. And the difference between me and him, the biggest difference for me is I might be educated, I might be able to understand this stuff, but he has a reference point of hundreds, if not thousands, of patients that he can kind of in the back of his head compare and contrast, and he knows different things. He knows what
Yeah.
works, what doesn't work. So I
And
3 weeks ago, I set up an
also,
appointment.
so I would say from my experience, like I, after I interview, I love Jason Sezama. I think he's great
He
and I
said good things
recommend him
about
to
him too.
everybody. Oh, that's kind. But I like after I interviewed him on the podcast, I was like, sign me up. Like, I want you to look at my data. And it is kind of amazing just because he's done so much of this, like he can tell. You know, he can look at the data and say, this isn't a central apnea. This is caused by a leak. And I think what's happening is, you know, like your chin is doing this,
Chin
and then you're
dropping.
getting a leak here. And he's able to see that from the data, which is kind of amazing, but like it is really helpful in terms of troubleshooting how you can make it better.
Exactly. And he literally, we sat down about 3 weeks ago for like an hour, maybe an hour more. We got along so well because he played baseball at Gonzaga.
Oh,
So we
yeah.
got along really well. And we dug into my data. And, at the time the reason I scheduled the appointment because I thought about like, okay, after talking to the Palm, and I knew he would say like, oh, you're doing great. But if I had like a recommendation, they'd probably say, okay, go for it. So when I sat down with him, he was going through everything. He's like, yeah, he's like, you can do a lot better than this, a lot better. He's like, first of all, he's like, the way, and you've talked about this in some of your podcasts, and I've heard about it, where you get put on a range on these auto VPAP. I mean, people don't know these auto machines where you're put on a range from 5 to 15, 8 to 20, whatever it may be, and it just adjusts, and that can cause disruption, especially a light sleeper, like
Yep.
pressure. I felt like I was blowing on my face some nights, and I
Yep.
was crazy. He's like, first thing we're going to do is put you on a static pressure. Try it. He's like, just try this. Talk to your provider. Try it and see what happens. And then we meet in 2 weeks. So he follows up with you. So we went through everything, understood everything. So that night, I put on a static pressure of 12. And I reached out to my provider. It's funny because he was like, yeah, good idea. That's what the
Yeah.
staff said. And who knows if the doctor even, heard about it.
Yeah.
So I did that. I put it on at 12 first. And just for the hell, I put, and it was a lot of pressure, but I was used to the mask and everything at this point to where it wasn't that much of adjustment. It actually felt more
Yes.
natural than all the, I felt like I was gasping for air early in the night all the time. I wasn't on a
Yeah.
ramp or anything, but I felt like it was too low a pressure to start, which I know
Yes.
now.
So
And
that's exact all that you're describing is exactly what happened to me.
I woke up the next morning and, I just for hell, I want to see, I opened up the, I use a DreamStation 2 right as of today. And I open up the app and I'm like, zero AHI. Zero. I was like, I've never had it. I think I had a zero one time, like a zero. I'm like, is that even possible? And then of course I take out the card, put an Oscar, I take a look, and there's still some rares in there, rares, some yellow disruptions, and I'm like, okay, there's some rares in there. And he was explaining to me about like snores, rares, like everything, and then I
So
watched some of his videos.
respiratory effort, something or other
Related
arousals,
arouser,
related
related
arousals.
arouser.
There we go. Are you a new or struggling CPAP user? Are you waking up and flinging your CPAP mask across the room in frustration? Maybe you have mask leak, skin irritation, or wake up with a dry mouth. You might be dealing with uncomfortable trapped gas from swallowing air or hair breakage from your headgear. If any of this sounds familiar, I made a workbook just for you. The 6-week CPAP Solutions Workbook is out now. It's just 30 pages and has been designed to give you all the answers to the most common CPAP problems. CPAP isn't for everyone, and I hear way too many stories of people abandoning their CPAP and leaving it on a shelf or in a closet. The workbook includes a 6-week tracker that lets you see progress over time. And if CPAP therapy isn't going well for you, you can return to your doctor and show them that you've given CPAP therapy your best effort and ask about other treatment options. To order the 6-week CPAP Solutions Workbook, follow the link at sleepapneastories.com or find the link in the show notes.
So I was like, okay. And when we talked, he said, start with 12, try to get up to 13, or was it 13.5 or 14 by the next time we meet. And I was like, why don't I just start on 14 tonight? Because I'm like impatient. He's like, trust me, just start at like 12 and we'll work your
And
way up.
an
And this
ex
way,
Major League Baseball player. So,
yeah, I'm
like,
like
why would we
competitive. I'm
start
like,
lower?
why don't we
Let's
start
just
on what? Yeah,
let's
let's go
challenge
for it.
ourselves.
So I tried to stay patient. I listened to his expert advice and I did 12 again the next night. It was a zero again. And then I upped it to like 13 the next night. Zero, zero, zero. I had like five straight nights of zero at AHI. And I'm like, and I was looking at the data and there's still some blips. We explained talking about REM, deep sleep, and all the different things to look for. And I'm a perfectionist, which is not a good thing in this case because you're trying to have the perfect flow rate and it's
Perfectionism
not
is
going to
like
happen.
literally the worst thing with sleep because I feel
Ever.
like I sleep much better when I'm not tracking anything. Like, I had a
I know.
couple of weeks where I was doing an in-lab sleep study. I don't even know, like wearing sleep image rings to track
Yep.
this and wearing an Oura ring.
I have an
And
aura ring.
I sleep so much worse when
I
I'm,
agree.
like waking up in the morning and thinking, how did I do? How did it go?
Yeah.
Whereas,
Like, oh,
like,
I said I slept terrible, but I feel good. Oh no, I should feel bad. Like I check my Oura ring once a quarter, once half. I wear it every night for sleep, and I have like a whole 4 or 5 years of data there. But I check it like once a quarter to see trends. That's it now. Is why I used to check it. Same thing.
you
That's why
can't get into
my
that whole everyday thing. My
the
brain is
wearable,
just.
especially with like O2 rings that people wear. There's no, I'll lose my mind. But I think, but again, going up and then using that static pressure, and then I met with them again about a week ago, not even. And yeah, it was compared to where I was prior to wearing a CPAP and then wearing a CPAP for those 6 months. Of course, it was better. I was doing, obviously, I always told myself that even if it was like a 3 point something AHI, it's still better than the 12 you were having every night, basically. You know what I mean? You're still having less oxygen desaturation. You're still doing better and better. And then with this, I was like, I'm doing much better now. I felt a lot better too.
That's
And then he
great.
was like, okay, there's some things still. And then he wanted me to put on, you know, we're finally landed on like getting up to a pressure like I think I'm on like 15 with actually the EPR on 3 because he was explaining to me about this is where it gets really complex, right? Like about exhalation, about carbon dioxide, holding on to carbon dioxide and things like that. And that was new to me. I was like, oh, what are you talking about? I thought he was doing
And
great.
the,
And I'm
and
like,
then you'll get into, have you listened to my interview with Dr. William Noah yet?
yes, about the VCOM. Is that the guy? Or no, is that the
So
That's
that's
the first one I listened to because he told me
okay.
to try
So that's the
VCOM.
whole
I
thing,
did. I tried the VCOM one night and I couldn't, felt like I couldn't get air in. Like I could not.
I mean, it
And the first
doesn't
night I
help every
forced
person
myself.
for sure.
Well, I forced myself to wear it the whole night. And I felt like, I could not, and I forced it the whole first night. And I can't, I woke up with like a zero, and my flow rate looked decent, but I'm like, man, that was brutal. I felt like I didn't sleep well
Yeah,
at all.
well,
And then I
don't
tried
do
it again
it.
the
If it's
next
not for
night.
you, don't do
Well, yeah, the next night I
it.
tried it, 20 minutes, took it off. The next night I tried again, 15 minutes, took it off. I'm like, this ain't worked for me because I
No.
feel like, and then I read online again, some people have that issue where they don't feel
Yep.
like they're not getting enough in air in. But the concept is makes sense. And I read the white paper. That's how I found it through your
Right.
podcast, that white paper.
Yes.
And I read the whole white paper tour through that because I understand how to read those
My
things. And I'm
God, we're
like,
basically twinsies, Bob.
it was so interesting to me
Is
because the
your wife
science,
completely sick of you? Because my husband is just like it's not that he doesn't
she's the other
care.
end.
He
Other
just
end of the spectrum. Like
doesn't
she's
want
just
to
like
read the
sleeps.
white paper.
No, not at all. She was a former captain in the Marine Corps. She's so much tougher than I ever will
Oh,
be.
wow.
Yeah, so it's yeah, totally opposite ends. I'm the techie, I'm the nerd, and she's like the practical doer.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, but I do talk about it all the time to where, and again, this is where I got to be careful not to tweak and kind of like I have to find what works, stay consistent for a while, and then look at trends rather than saying
Yes.
one bad night and be like freak out.
Yeah, that is
And
one thing that when I just was kind of writing about the Oscar software, like for the workbook that I just wrote, and that is one of the things about Oscar. It's like some people like to see data, but it's really important not to get super hung up on, like, is my data better like this night than that night? And that's just not really going to be that helpful longer term to
No, it's going
people,
to creating, and that's where it would create more angst because then you wake up in the middle of the night, you wake up and like even me, like to this day, like I always like change positions very, very, very methodically because I don't want my breathing to stop and hold and be flagged as something. Like I'm so thinking that's how I think it, middle of the night. I'm thinking of like 2 in the morning. I gotta turn over, keep breathing. Don't want this to show up as an obstructive apnea tomorrow. Like that's the way I operate. It's ridiculous. But
But you're very new
yeah.
to the whole process, so it's
Right.
understandable. I feel like you're gonna calm down over time, right? Like it's just
Yeah.
that we're trying to, you only just got your diagnosis. And I think in terms
Right.
of people with sleep apnea, it really does take months and months to kind of figure
Right.
this out and
For
get
sure.
comfortable with it.
For sure. And I think the other thing we talked about, because I talked about that again, that mouth guard I had, and because I was having with my F30 eye mask, I was having, because again, that's the other thing. Leak rate only shows up for large leaks on these apps.
Yep.
And knowing what I know now, like, yeah, the companies
It has to
recommend you
be
stay
a
under 24,
really big
but it
leak.
has to be a really big leak to show up.
Yeah.
And mine was always showing 100% no leak rate. So I'm thinking it's great. Then I look at the data, I'm like, there's some spikes here.
Yeah.
I could be much better with that. So I switch back to the F30 mask. I wear the mouthpiece so my chin doesn't fall back because that's where I was
Okay.
leaking at the bottom. And that's where everything changed
And
in the last
so
3 weeks.
go back to, so is it a mandibular advancement device that holds your chin
No,
forward or
it's a
no?
double piece. It's almost like a snore guard almost.
Okay, but
That's what people would call because it does
it does
y'all
hold
like it
your
keeps your teeth like
chin from
yeah, it holds it from
dropping.
falling back. Falling back, but it
Yeah.
can't be adjusted. Like a mandibular device can be adjusted because
Yeah, and
I got
this is
asked if
not
I wanted one of those
adjustable.
before teeth grinding too. They just prescribe them for that as well.
Yep.
But it's not. It's more kind of like a molding that I got. I got it one from the dentist that broke, but then I got one and molded my own teeth, and it keeps my jaw just like parallel. It doesn't let me fall
Yeah,
back.
which honestly, I think that that's quite a huge thing that we're not talking about. I think because of the dysfunction in the system and that, doctors are prescribing CPAPs and dentists are prescribing oral appliances. But I finally got an oral appliance to wear with my CPAP like just a couple of months ago. And I really think it's making a big difference. Like the biggest thing, like, and I know I talked with Jason about this as well, but the biggest thing for me is just that it holds my lower jaw stable so that it can't fall back. And that just means that I have a lot less disruption to my sleep, I think, because
There's no doubt about it.
there's not that thing of like, and now I'm having a big leak and now I have to kind of adjust my mask, and it feels a lot more stable. So I
Yeah, there's
think
no
that,
doubt.
I would love for more people to understand that that's an option. I think that, like it's a sort of afterthought that people don't even mention, but
And for
yeah, it's
me,
definitely working well for me.
and I didn't, I didn't, I don't, I, I used a night guard for years because of teeth grinding, so I was used to having it in my mouth. Like some
Yes.
people, especially top and bottom, it feels like you're like can't really, but I'm used to
Yeah.
it. I was wearing it
Yeah.
anyway, and it doesn't have to be a $2,000 one from your dentist. At least for me, like I got
Right.
this. I think I got it on Amazon, and I just molded my teeth
Yeah.
because I my dentist wanted like $1,200 for a replacement. I was
Oh,
like, get
yeah.
out of here. I was like, I paid like
So I
150
think
for it,
for
and it
me, it's
works
maybe
great.
slightly different just because now I'm a bit further down this than you.
Oh
So
yeah.
now I have severe sleep apnea. So with an AHI of sort of like in the 40s. So for me, having the proper mandibular advancement device that's
Oh yeah.
adjusted so that it keeps my jaw forward is probably like really helpful. But yeah, people that have milder sleep apnea, I'm not sure that that action is as important if they're wearing
Yeah, I think for
CPAP,
the, I
you know?
mean, it made a huge difference at Lee because like a full face mask, like Jason, we were talking about using a nasal possibly because he, and I just said, listen, I tried the nasal, like I sit there with it. I'm like, I can't imagine. I tried taping my mouth shut. And
Yeah.
even though I have like a 5 o'clock shadow all the time, even if I shaved, I was like, I get sweaty and the humidity. He's like, well, you just turn the humidity off and try the nasal. And I tried to sit there and I was like, I can't imagine. And I'm comfortable
No,
with the full face mask, but I was
same.
like, I'll just stay with that. And then my leak rates, once I started wearing that mouth guard again, the different one, I had a couple different ones, but the one that was both top and bottom where it just kept my jaw kind of steady. I mean, my leak rates, I was looking this morning, were zero last night. Zero across the board, zero with
It's
a full face mask.
amazing. Can I just
I mean, it's
be
night
the
and
first
day.
person to give you a gold star? Because
I mean,
I feel like these are the things that, like, you know, your doctor probably doesn't care about this minutiae, but it makes such a difference when you get your leaks under control and are not waking up as much. Like, you just feel a
Oh,
lot better. So that's
but that
really
was the other
good.
thing that I was telling Jason in the last couple of weeks since we made some adjustments. That was another symptom that came up. I was getting up to go to the bathroom a couple times a night, and I do drink a lot of fluids during that. I mean, I drink a lot of,
Same.
I mean, a lot. But I was still getting up quite a bit, and but when I got on CPAP, it was like one time max a night. But it was still pretty consistent one time a night. Last couple of weeks, like last night, I slept 9 hours straight last night. Not one wake up, nothing, with a zero AHI. Not that AHI is the all
That's the
encompassing, but like
dream, Bob, right there.
it was last night was my dream night. I was like, what a perfect day to talk to Emma. I was like, literally, it was the best night I've had. And now again, if I was to sit there, in the back of my mind, I'm sitting there. If I'm sitting there with Jason, he's probably like, you see the spike here? You see the spike? And then I'm gonna tear my dreams down. But because again, we're talking to Jason, we talked about possibly the possibility of going to bi-level because the way I'm set up, like these machines now, they have that EPR where it only goes down to three.
Yes.
You know the pressures with the three, and he's like four forward probably sweet spot for you, and the machines don't do that today. The only bi levels do that, so I'm possibly looking into doing that just to kind of again optimize and
Yeah.
maximize
I
everything.
think
But
that Jason feels quite strongly that the way that, like, I think he wishes, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but just from what
yeah.
I've heard him say, I think that he wishes that there wasn't this. Like, normally, what happens is people are put on these days APAP or, you know,
Yep.
CPAP. And then, you know, if they
Let
have
the
an issue
fail.
with that, they'll get put on BiPAP.
Yeah.
And then if something shows up, like, on their sleep study that, you know, they can't deal with that, they might get put on ASV. But I think
Right.
for Jason, he wishes that was more fluid and could really match to what they could see in the data was happening with people. So
Well,
yeah, I
yeah, I
don't know if
mean,
we'll move towards that or
I don't know. It's tough without, again, having worked in healthcare for many years and the dollars and cents involved in the whole, you know, beast of healthcare it is in the United States, especially, you know, ResMed, I mean, especially, I don't use a ResMed machine now, but their BiPAP machine can do CPAP as well. So
Yes.
why not just have one machine and then patients fail on this, they can just get easily moved. And why not have
Yes.
all three in one machine? They could easily do that with technology today. But I think it's more of a, I think there's a lot
Money.
more involved money with money. It just has to be. It doesn't make any sense otherwise because
Right.
it just makes sense. Like it just would make complete sense because then
Complete
you could,
sense.
you know, not have to do another sleep study before you had to get on an ASV or something like that, or
Totally
not
agree with
like.
you. Were you done with explaining about like you, that you've been to the pulmonologist and what happened there?
Yeah. I went through. Yeah, everything was great and this and that. Everything
Right.
was unbelievable. But again, talking to, I cannot recommend Jason enough to people. Like
I
if
love
you had
Jason. I recommend him
best
all the
couple
time.
$100 I ever spent ever, I got the
Same.
advanced
Yeah.
kind of like I mean, I told him, I said, listen, after our next conversation, I'm like, how's this work now? Like I want to stay in contact with you. I mean, I want like I'm gonna follow up with you in a couple months again. Like, how's that work? Because I'll pay because Again, it's not that I can't look at the data, but to make informed decisions that are educated enough
Yes.
to where your experience, I mean, I trust that.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was a difference maker. He changed my whole outlook on everything. I mean, he
So, yeah.
literally, like,
I
and I
felt
mean,
like
not that
I
I wasn't
knew a
doing
lot
well.
before I talked to
Yeah.
Jason, and I felt like he just has a different level of experience in different things. So he just asked a lot of really good questions and made me really dig into the data a little bit more. But yeah, I'll probably put a, since we've been saying how great he is, I'll probably put a link to him in the show notes for the episode. So one of the things before I let you go is I wanted to talk to you a little bit about I'm not sure exactly what it is you're doing with AI in healthcare, but I wondered if you might want to speak a little bit to how things are changing. I know, like, I'm familiar with Enzo data and people that are using AI to like read sleep tests and things like that. So what is it exactly you're doing?
Well, it's interesting. I joined this company. We're a tech startup about a year ago. I've been working in the life sciences, pharma space for quite a while, doing engineering work and sales on the commercial side. But this company focused strictly on medical affairs pieces of these pharma companies, which are the science people, the really medical folks that deal with, all their, whatever it may be. They're going for new indications, they're pushing stuff into clinical R&D, whatever it may be. So at this company, we use AI. Our engineers, our founders, I mean, they're the best of the best. Some of our best engineers in the world work at this company. And they found a sweet spot to where we can kind of look at data sources that are, these companies operate in kind of silos, where we can take all these data sources, ingest it all, enrich it with AI, and ultimately kind of give insightful information quickly for these medical folks, these medical affairs folks, to make decisions more efficiently and faster. So it basically takes, like, I always use the example as like of safety. Well, I do a lot of demonstrations of our product for customers, and I always use safety as an example. Like, there might be a safety concern around a certain product with the company, and it might be over here, or here, documented here, documented at a congress, at a conference, whatever it may be. But what our application does, instead of you having to take all the information, meet with your team to kind of go through it. Oh, is this a real safety concern we have to address, or is it something we need to like put on the label, this and that? Our system can kind of comb through all that data and kind of give it within seconds, give kind of educated like recommendations. And now we often say a human's always involved with this AI, like human has
Right.
to validate it. But in that regard, that's where it's like time, money, energy, like even for new indications of drugs, like there could be all these off-label uses across the ecosphere, and our system can kind of bring that all into one place, and they could be like, oh, a lot of physicians, a lot of KOLs, key opinion leaders across the country or across the globe are using it for this. Why don't we do look into doing some studies for that and see if it be a valid indication? So things like that in terms of AI. Now, AI across the landscape has exploded, which I joined this company a year ago. ChatGPT blew up about 8 months to a year ago to the mainstream, and that has blown things up because now everybody hears AI, they think ChatGPT, which we do some things not like ChatGPT, but we do like plain language summaries where we summarize different pieces of medical information and make it more like readable on a eighth grade level rather than you need a PhD to read it. Things like that. We do some really cool things like that. But I think with ChatGPT blowing up like it did, it really opened the doors for all these companies, especially in pharma and medical and healthcare, to look at AI, have initiatives. Like, there's a lot of people I know work at a lot of these companies that say, okay, we need to look at the AI space and what could we do? Where could it fit in our business? Not necessarily our company here, but like anything. And that got me thinking when I was talking to a couple of folks about like sleep apnea and these machines. Now, being an engineer at heart, the VPAPs, for example, the way these or APAPs, for example, a lot of times they'll see an event and they'll make an adjustment after the event. Whereas I look at AI, if you really, if they focus on changing the algorithm of the machines to have AI involved where it can anticipate events, like decreases them in breathing rate or things like that, or other things, you can, whatever it may be, and have the AI trigger, then that makes an APAP extremely
Sensitive
plausible
and
and work the way it
yeah.
should. I mean, at least my understanding of it. I mean, I understand you can titrate, you kind of get your exact pressure, but that's the way I look at it. And because I've seen AI in another company I worked at where with imaging, that's big in radiology now, where if you take a subset of millions and millions of breast cancer patients, you're looking at those images, And the AI can comb through an image and say, okay, this might be something, or this is not something, because we have a reference point of millions and millions of images we're comparing against in real time in seconds, rather than now the radiologist says, maybe it's something. So AI is really in it, and it's growing exponentially, right? It's crazy how fast it's moving, especially being in a company with AI and seeing how other companies are looking at different things across their business. And there's going to be really cool things to come out of this, I think, that's going to ultimately benefit patients, I think.
Yeah, I
As
hope
long as,
so.
again, back to our money conversation, the way, things drive healthcare, as long as, companies make the right decisions and they really make it truly beneficial to the patients, which they all say they do, and I hope they do. I don't want to be jaded about that, but I think,
Right.
there's a lot of room for growth there. But I mean, it's especially in healthcare, that's a big space for this, because it can really benefit in a lot, so many different ways. I see it, like I said, like what we do here, and there's so many other places to kind of apply it to. So it's
Yeah.
and it's and
I
it's
mean, I'm
again
really
it's it,
interested to see just how it's going to affect. I mean, I've already with Enzo Data, like using AI to make it much quicker, to score sleep studies. I mean, that's
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
it's
That's
going
a
to
huge one.
huge, it's going to be a huge change. And I think a positive one, because I think a lot of people worry about, like I'm going to be
Jobs.
speaking to a conference with sleep techs next week. And I think that my message for them is always, it's not that it's this negative thing where suddenly AI is going to take away your job, because my hope
Right.
is that then those people will be redeployed into one-on-one patient education
Exactly.
and help with CPAP, which is what we really need. Like, I'd
That's
much rather
exactly
have a sleep tech sitting
right.
one-on-one with a patient in a CPAP clinic, explaining these are some really common problems, this is how to overcome them, these are some accessories you might want to use, and just all these things that people deal with alone. And I think that, having the one-on-one help would be a way better use of those people's
Yes.
time.
It's exactly how I explain when I do presentation for clients. Like, some of these companies are gun shy about, like, it's gonna take my job. And that's not, it's actually gonna make your job, you're gonna be so much more valuable now, because the way we position this, and it's true, is those that embrace it, they're gonna have a lot of the grunt work or upfront work done. Like for sleep techs, for example, they'll be handed basically a sleep study that's already read. They don't have to go
Right.
through it and take that painstakingly time. Now they have that, but you still need a human
To
to kind of explain to
check
another
that,
human and
yeah.
check and make sure there's no, I mean, it's not perfect AI, but
Right.
it might, and then you
Yeah,
go
I
through
think
that
that
and then you're able.
their accuracy is like 90 something percent, right? So it's not 100%. So you still need a person involved, but
And it never will be. I mean,
yeah.
it probably will never would. But if you have that person, like you said, then it comes down to you can spend more time educating the patient and really explain to them exactly what this means, rather than spending half your time or three quarters of your time actually scoring the study.
Yeah.
And then going to the patient, be like, okay, try this mask. Yeah, you have AHI. This, you, and they're pressed for time because they're seeing so many patients. And the
Yes.
sleep techs, I mean, they take the brunt of everything. And that's where it's almost like nurse practitioners or PAs in the offices,
Yes.
or respiratory therapists for that matter. I worked with a lot of those in the past. They're the ones that are really patient centric, and they're the ones that mean everything to people. Like
Yeah.
Jason, like I can't say enough about him. Like, he spent hours with me.
We
I would
love
never
Jason.
get that. I would never get that kind of time
I know.
and experience in a medical practice anywhere in the US, unless
Yeah.
there's more of him out there. I'm sure there is. People have pockets that do that, or
There's
a good
not
sleep
that
tech that
many.
really
There
cares.
there's a few
No.
people, but there's not that many. And
I it's
honestly, I think we
true.
need a lot more people doing that,
I
especially
agree.
by telehealth, like able to advise people in their own homes and actually see, like, this is what I'm using, this is how I'm putting it on. Like, I think that there's so much that we could do with that for sure that would help people. So is there anything else that we need to touch on before I let you go?
I mean, I think that's it. It was great kind of speaking with it, because I'm a big fan, because I
Well,
again, I started with
thanks.
that, some of the doctors you have on, especially some of the podcasts you have around anxiety, because that was another thing too. My
Yeah, we
anxiety
didn't
levels have
really
come.
talk all about that, and we didn't talk a whole bunch about your feelings around your diagnosis, and
Yeah, it's one of
so.
those things where the biggest thing I take away from that is, in a short version, is I had a daughter 3.5 years ago. And I'm 46, my wife's 44. So we had a kid late. And ever since we had a kid, it's like I became hyper focused on trying to stay alive forever, really, because she's so young. And so that's kind of once I got the sleep out, if it's going to help me live longer, then I'm all for it. Whatever it is, I'll do whatever. You know, I'll do whatever it
And
takes. And that's kind of what
how's the anxiety now?
much, much, much better. I've always been an anxious person in terms of like being a perfectionist and being prepared. Like I do a lot of client presentations for work. I do like talks, like public speaking in terms of like things with athletics and things like that. And I used to be a mess, like a real mess. Like pretty common for folks, but I would get to the point where I get like sick. And that's completely gone. Not that I mean it real. I mean it's been gradually decreasing as I got older anyway. I think there's a combination of things there, like where you actually just start to realize like how many people are really listening to you sometimes. But ultimately I think it really has tapered off a lot in terms of like it's small changes over the course of months rather than like it didn't happen overnight. But I noticed like just having conversations like bigger conversations it's dramatically improved, which
That's great.
I'm hoping it continues to as I kind of get dialed in. 'Cause like you said, I'm 7 months in. I've learned a
You're a
ton.
newbie.
I am a newbie, and it's like
I've had
you
CPAP
try to
for
stay.
16 years,
I heard that on
almost.
I was like 16 years. I'm like, but that's
A long
you
time.
know you the biggest thing for me is like the compliance rates. I totally understand. And it's funny, I was saying this to my wife the other day. I was like, if this was 20 years ago and I was just getting done baseball, I would totally try to be certified as a sleep tech right now. If I knew what I knew now, I would totally, it was right up my alley because I like coaching, I like teaching, and I think it's so undereducated folks. Like I look at my mom, I look at older folks, like how much I know how complicated it is for me. Like how
That's
complicated is it
crazy.
for elderly people that really are diagnosed in their 60s and 70s? Like, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, so I think, and I think the technology, what I'm excited about is the technology is going to change in the next, like, I look 20 years ago, I look back at like research and stuff and videos, even, and where CPAP was 20 years ago, even 10 years ago. And with wearables being such a big thing now and things like that, I
Yeah,
think
I think
10
so. I keep
years.
saying this, but I really think that wearables and home sleep testing is gonna
Changing the game. Because you think about
together
the
are just
wearable,
gonna like merge in the
oh,
future,
they are because
and
it's
we're
starting to
gonna
happen
just
now.
have like an Apple Watch or an Oura Ring say, please see your doctor and get, a test for sleep apnea, or this is how many events we noticed, and that puts you in this range, go and get diagnosed. I do think that's going to be a really huge difference.
Yeah,
So
wearables
listen,
are
I could talk to you like for hours
I
and
know.
hours,
I know, I
but thank
know,
you so
I
much for
know.
joining me. I appreciate it.
Same, I appreciate it too. It's great.
Thanks so much for listening. I love hearing from you. If you'd like to be featured in an upcoming episode, please email me at sleepapneastories@gmail.com. That's also the place to get in touch if you just want to say hi or ask a question. Alternatively, you can always reach me on Instagram. My handle there is @sleepapneastories. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen. This really helps a wider audience to find the episodes, and I really appreciate it.